The following program is brought to you by We Are Many. To learn more about this program or to find others like it, check out wearemany.org.
Hi everybody, I'm very happy to be here. I'm thrilled to be invited to this very conference. I was just talking.
Please can't hear you.
Yeah. And the tough times we have in Egypt, it's very nice to see the euphoria and enthusiasm that I've seen since yesterday. Fresh air to my lungs. I will try to describe what happened in Egypt. It's a very tough task, but I will try to describe what happened in Egypt since even before 2011 till now. And you would usually hear in the media descriptions to what happened in 2011, classifying the uprisings as Facebook uprisings, middle class uprisings, even Tahrir uprising, which of course was not the case. It was all of that together, but it was much more than this. In fact, at least, for example, when you see where it happened, Tahrir was not the turning point of the first days of the revolution. It was elsewhere, outside Cairo, in fact, in Suez and Alexandria. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, trying to see what happened in these kind of classified bourgeois media-friendly descriptions is wrong. And very few analysts have seen what happened in a political economy perspective. Of course, we have Gilbert Ashkar here. Comrade Gilbert is one of them, analyzing the how it went back years before 2011 to see what happened in Egypt, at least. And it goes back to the crisis of the state in Egypt, which has a very unique status. The state depended on for a long period on a state capitalist model. The state was depending on rent coming mainly from Suez Canal and oil for a while, and at the same time it was a what we call caretaker state, that the state hires employees and gives universal subsidies for food and other stuff in return of stability. That was the social compromise for a while. And of course, the social compromise went through different crises. One of them was under Mubarak, when the external debt was exploding. And then came the war against the Kuwait war. And then for in return of Egypt's interfering in the war, half of the external debt of Egypt was dropped by the Paris Club. And then the system could continue for a little while. And then the crisis hit back again, because it couldn't continue like that. And the solution that was advised was adopting the neoliberal approach. Since, of course, it began with the 90s, with the dropping the debt, the IMF came and there was an agreement, and the World Bank came and they started the structural adjustment, classical kind of structural adjustment program in Egypt, and privatization. And then we have seen a boom in the stock market, which was not very active before that, and that kind of thing. But it wasn't until 2003 when all the developments that happened during that decade, with the emergence of an industrial class, capitalists that were very close to Mubarak regime, and then turning into a financial industrial segment of the capitalist class, and the new option was there to adopt deeper policies of liberalization, and then this class comes as partner in the ruling class of Egypt. And the, in my opinion, usually people say that Mubarak was trying to get his son to succeed him, but it, in my opinion, it was vice versa. Those who had interest in adopting this project choose Gamal Mubarak to come after Mubarak to represent their interests. And then even the ruling party has changed, and then came Ahmad Nazif's government in 2003, and the businessmen, those businessmen, was not, didn't, were not only supporting the government from behind, or that the government represented them in the usual way. They came in the government themselves, businessmen, having at least five ministries, controlling five ministries themselves, and started the deepest neoliberal transformation of Egypt Europe from 2003 to 2007, 2008, when the international financial crisis happened. And of course, as a consequence of that, and that usually 2011 is seen as if it came at a sudden event happening out of nowhere. But in fact, in the years before 2011, we have seen an upsurge in workers' protests and democratic movements like Kefaya, demanding the change of constitution. And this was all began in 2000 with the solidarity campaign with the Palestinian Intifada, in fact. And this ignited the youth to try to think of new ways of changing the regime. After 2000, when after the ousting of Mubarak, of course the movement there in Tahrir and elsewhere didn't constitute only of people who had social demands, but in my opinion this was the core of the thing. Even we had a discussion this morning about the workers' interference, and people were in Tahrir and Suez and other squares in the country, but the crucial moment, one of the crucial moments that helped all that movement to convince the ruling class that they should get rid of Mubarak was a general strike by post workers, public transport workers, Suez Canal workers, and this, yeah, put enough pressure to make the regime take the decision to get rid of Mubarak with an agreement not to, kill him or sacrifice him. Yeah. He is now free after years of the revolt. But one of the things that happened after that is that we have seen two big social movement workers, waves of workers protest in Egypt in February and March, and then in September. But of course, one of the sins of the revolutionary left and democratic, radical democratic movement in Egypt, that they didn't really engage with that movement. That would have been the real support to demands of the democratization and other kind of how we change the constitution in the elections, and to merge the social demands with the democratic demands. So people were swallowed, in fact, in the democratic fight with the liberals and their agenda, and the social movement was not really, nearly alone. Nobody to represent their demands, really, nobody to try to organize them. And so they tried organizing themselves by establishing independent unions, but of course that was not enough to put the ruling class under attack. They were defensive, but the machine was not disrupted as at all. Even, there is that case of one of the most important businessmen who was very close to Mubarak, Ahmed Aiz. He's a steel manufacturer and very important political figure within the ruling party. He was arrested under charges of corruption. But at the same time, we've seen his company expand their profit during the months after the 2011 revolution. So, in fact, the machine was working as usual, but on the surface, there was some defensive movement. That's why when the Muslim Brotherhood came to power also in 2012, they were much under certain circumstances. Of course, the election put us to a very hard choice between a representative of the Muslim Brotherhood, reactionary, they don't really support social demand, justice demands, and one representative of the old regime. So, the tough choice was to vote for Morsi, who was the president of Egypt afterwards. But the Muslim Brotherhood adopted the same neoliberal discourse of the old regime. They tried to manufacture relations with the old, with the businessmen of the regime. They have put known figures of Mubarak, crony capitalists on the presidential plane to China and elsewhere. And in fact, they were also reaching out for the IMF and defending austerity, an austerity program, and that the same kind of policies we see now in Egypt under the IMF agreement, under the Sisi's rule. And of course, for 3 months or 4 months after the Muslim Brotherhood came to power, the social movement, the workers' movement, stopped in anticipation to see what's going to happen. But after 3 months, they understood that nothing is going to happen. And then we have seen, I think, one of the most important waves of the social protest in the history of Egypt during the 9 months that the other 9 months of Morsi's rule. And this put us again on another tough test, because everybody knew that the military is preparing for the coup. But with the social movement in the streets, there was this, the question was, is there a possibility that you leave the movement in the streets alone, asking for radical social justice demands and condemn the possible coup by the military? And of course, the balance of forces was not really in our direction. Mm-hmm. After that, the kind of repression we have seen in Egypt. First, it was directed towards the Muslim Brotherhood and their actors. Thousands of them were, thousands were killed just 3 months, 2 months after the 30th June demonstrations in Rabaa and Nahda. More than 1,000 people were killed in the two squares. A massacre that will haunt us for a while in the country, and they were targeted everywhere. And then, of course, after Sisi came to power, he was in power, really in power. He had someone to be on the surface, but he was managing everything from behind. And when he came to power, he began to have his revenge even towards the people who supported him from the Nasserists and the liberals of Egypt. And now you can imagine the kind of repressive measures we have in Egypt. Even a meeting of the head of some official parties, one of them was leading the government that came after Morsi, in fact. They were having their Ramadan iftar in one of the in a Swiss club under the Swiss embassy in Egypt. And then they sent their thugs and attacked the politicians, their own politicians, in fact, just 2 years ago. And so the room even for expressing some opposition, some managed opposition, like the situation under Mubarak is not allowed at the moment. And at the same time, with the coordination with the IMF, the ruling coalition with the security machine and the bureaucracy and the financial industrial segment of the capitalist class are throwing us at one of the most aggressive attacks of neoliberal transformations in Egypt, with the privatizations, raising all fuel prices, electricity, water, several times in the few years under Sisi's rule. And of course, the possibility of social dissent is very narrow, because I can mention one case when a syndicate of public transport workers, they organized several strikes under Mubarak and after Mubarak and under Morsi, and they were just discussing to call for a strike on their Facebook group, and the security forces knew about it, and they were all arrested and were under military trial. So that kind, and in other strikes, there were workers were fired at with live ammunition. So it's becoming very difficult. Of course, the independent unions nearly disappeared. Now we only have the old state union under Mubarak. They're trying to revitalize it, but it's not really connected to rank and file of the workers, and doesn't. It represents the interests of the state. But in my opinion, that with this bleak view, my opinion is that the crisis of the state continues, because the neoliberalism cannot really solve the ruling class crisis. It cannot really generate enough revenue that can start a new compromise. The regime is relying heavily on force, mm-hmm. on repression, mm-hmm. and nothing else. This cannot really continue long. But how this will change, this is something that is very difficult to suggest. Well, I want to finish by remembering some of our comrades and colleagues and friends who are under arrest in the regime's prison: Haysam Mohammedin, Amr Ali, people who inspire us with their struggle, and we hope that they will be free soon. Thank you.
The preceding program was a production of WeAreMany.org, a website dedicated to publishing radical and activist media that promotes a better understanding of today's world while also putting forward a vision for a better future. We Are Many is a project of the Center for Economic Research and Social Change. To learn more about this program or to find others like it, check out WeAreMany.org.